Blog Talk Radio.
Parental guidance is suggested.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happened.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of the You Serve Military Podcast with your hosts CJ and Troy.
Welcome to the You Served Radio Show and Podcast. My name is CJ. It is March 25th, 2010, and we are coming to you live from four, if you count our hidden buddies, different states throughout these great United States of America. Coming to you from here in the greatest state in the Union, of course. Mark is coming out of South Carolina. Troy coming out of New York, and our script coming from Wisconsin. Don't know if that person was identified or not. Anyway, welcome to the show. We got a great show for you, as always. My name is CJ, and I am one of the hosts of the show, and I also blog as the companion blog to this here radio show at youserved.com. Both the radio show and blog are brought to you by our good friends over at the VAMortgageCenter.com. VAMortgageCenter.com, and they specialize in VA loans for our troops and veterans. And let me tell you something, I used them. My home in Alabama was financed through the VA Mortgage Center, and I couldn't tell you. Couldn't have been an easier process, because our first home that we bought through the VA was confusing and difficult, but they know how to streamline that process. So if you're thinking about it, there you go. I also blog at my other blog. Well, I also blog at a soldier's perspective, soldiersperspective.us, and I don't really write much more on military pundits. Now, Troy, my co-host, I don't think is in right now. He's on the phone with his boss doing some real work while I get to have some fun here. But I am joined. Troy blogs over at boohammer.com, B-O-U-hammer.com. He also blogs on this year companion blog at userve.com and over at Military Pundits quite often. But I am joined by my highly esteemed producer, Marcus. Good evening.
Good evening, CJ. Good evening, everybody.
How are you?
Tired. I was on duty yesterday. And
oh,
I came home.
Sucks.
Yeah,
you
I
just
stayed
woke
up until. No, I didn't just wake up. I've been up since about noon. But I stayed up until about 4 a.m., slept for about maybe 2 hours, and then went to bed for about. I've only been around 9, so about 3 more hours, so a little tired. It's okay. It happens. I'm the red shirt producer. I'm tired. I don't care. You can call me Eeyore today.
Do I need to run the board?
No, I got it. I blog at a soldier's perspective. I blog at You Served, and I've been doing a lot of work this afternoon getting stuff ready for Washington, D.C. Yay!
So what's going on in Washington, D.C.? I don't quite get it.
I don't know, this little thing that you may have heard of called the Milblog Conference.
That's right, April 8th through the 10th, right? Or 9th.
Well, April 9th and 10th for the actual conference. But if you're in town on the 8th and you're going to be in the area of the hotel, the Arlington Weston thingamajig or Gateway something or another, then, we'll be there on the 8th broadcasting.
Yeah, and if you're there, by all means, come by and see a live taping of the You Served radio show. We can fill up our hotel room.
We'll be broadcasting probably from our room, from the room of CJ and Marcus. So email me marcus@userved.com if you would like to drop by, and you're going to be there. And when I actually get to the hotel, I can tell you exactly where we'll be.
Hey, this is Troy. I got a question. Can we make it? Can we try to have like a Guinness Book of World Records and see how many people we can cram in a hotel room?
No.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah,
no.
But I think.
Oh. No. I'm gonna veto that one before it even starts. I have to sleep there. I don't want like 40 people in there.
Let me tell you though.
You don't want to sleep in there.
It would take a lot of people
because my high school prom, my senior year, I had a big party up in my room. This was in Japan. You know, it was in a hotel, and I started with about 6 or 7 friends at the hotel. I don't remember much that happened after we started, but I do remember that when I woke up the next morning, somehow I had about 26 people in my room just passed out all over the place, on the floor, on the bed, in the bathtub, on the dresser, I mean, you name it. So we got to at least be 26.
You're making me nervous. I don't like this idea because I know the miscreants that Jimbo and Matt will bring with them. People like David Bellavia. People like Stevie Seavey.
Yeah, but you're going to have people
like the sniper.
People like Tina Elise in your room, and she'll just brighten up the whole place.
Well, yeah, Gina will be there, and she's good people.
Yeah. Right. Well, anyway, if you're going to be there, you know, we'd love to have you come and watch a live taping of the show. It might make it a little more interesting. You know, stop by. Obviously, I think we'll stop at about 46 people, letting them in. So. Anyway, Troy, since you're on the line, why don't you tell us about the Facebook and the Twitter and our eBay store.
Yeah. So, anyways, hello, everybody. This is Troy. I'm your other co-host. I think I missed some of the intros.
We intros.
Okay, so you guys know where I write. I mean, everyone's heard me. If you don't, just check out YouServed. You'll figure it out. Google my name. I'm all over the place. So over at the eBay store, we are, as everyone knows, we are taking items that are donated or whatever for us, and we put them up and sell them and give them money to Soldiers Angels. This last week, I think we sold Gina Lisa's calendar for about $25. And yet again, I was outbid on the coin, and it went for $14. I meant to bid higher, and I never got back to it, and that sold for like $14. Don't forget, as we sell these coins, once we get $250, there's some head shaving that's going to happen down at the Millblog Conference of Marcus and CJ. And yours truly will be doing the shaving in some kind of disguise, I guess, and we're $14 in that, $14.02 from that $250 to watch Marcus and CJ heads shaved live on across the internet, www. Even in China, they'll be able to watch it. They may not get to Google, but they'll be able to watch YouServe
host. At night.
You should get that shaved. And how do you know about all these things happening? How do you keep up with it? Check out facebook.com/YouServed. Our fan page, go there, check it out, sign up, become a fan, and as we come out with updates over the next couple of weeks of things that are going to be happening in the conference, which is only a couple weeks away, that's how you'll know. And check out twitter.com/userb, become a follower of us there. We got a few thousand, couple thousand people, and we also put updates there, so you can find us on the web, userb.com.
Now, Troy, where are you coming to us from? I noticed you're on your cell phone. Where are you called in from?
I am called in from Aberdeen, Maryland, in a hotel right next to Cal Ripken Jr. Ball Field. So that's where I'm at today.
All right. Awesome. Well, great. I remember Aberdeen quite well. Now, have you gone on to APG at all?
That's where I've been. Yeah, I've been on APG the last couple of days. That place is totally changing. With the BRAC moves happening, there's a lot
of
stuff on.
I love the Tank Museum out there. We used to go up there quite a bit. And my oldest memory, which is just a passing memory, is I must have been like 4 years old or something. But I remember my father taking me and my baby sister out to Aberdeen Proving Grounds and sitting under one of the tanks with the real slanted front part of it An old tank. And having lunch in the shadow of that tank. And it's about the oldest memory I have, and it's just, you know, it took us years to figure out where that could have possibly been because, you know, that was my only memory. I don't remember where it was. And finally, one year, I asked my dad about it, and he says, oh, that was up at APG. So cool place.
Yeah, you know, I was driving by there tonight, and I was talking to my wife, and I said, this has got to be the largest outside, you know, museum display of vehicles I've ever seen on any military post. You know, being the headquarters, APG being the headquarters of the Ordnance Center, I think they have every tank and track vehicle from our military and every military we've ever dominated on this post.
Nice.
Quite something.
All right. Well, we've got a great show for you tonight. We've got two great guests. Our first guest is going to be Sam Fiddler, and he's from votefiddler.org, and he's running for office, political office. He's a veteran. And am I missing something? Oh, okay. And we've also got Matthew Burton's going to come on after that and talk about, he's a veteran that ran for office. So we're going to talk to, first we're going to talk to what it's like to possibly, you know, be a winner. And then we're going to talk to a loser, Matt Burton, who didn't quite make it in office. And we're going to talk about how his ego was affected and all that kind of stuff. So look forward to talking to Matt. We talk to him quite often. He's a great guy, does all kinds of wonderful things. But and you know, he did a lot better, Troy. For, you know, the guy was running in, of all places, Chicago. He didn't have a prayer to be
conservative, pro-troop in Chicago and be honest and not be corrupt. I mean, he had a lot of things stacked against him.
He did. And for all that, I mean, even to get a vote, you know, he got, I think he got, what, 13 votes? Something like that, like 1,000 or something. But to get anybody to vote for him, he did pretty decent. And not sell his soul to do it was quite well. But he obviously learned a lot from that situation. So we're going to talk to him about that later. And then after that, in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Mike Scotty, a former Marine. Or is he still a Marine?
I think he got out, but I don't know for sure. I know he's been touring with the with all the showings of the movie all around the country. It's in theater.
Yeah,
so
I think he's a former Marine, but we're going to talk to Mike Scotty. He's the one that filmed and, I think, produced, but at least directed the movie Severe Clear, and we'll have a look up to that a little bit later, but I did a review of the movie not too long ago on ASP. But anyway, let's go ahead and what do you think? Get started?
Do we do our disclaimer and our pledge?
Oh, that's right. Yes. Marcus, I guess we need to do a disclaimer in our pledge. Let's go ahead and knock that out.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The views and commentary from the Boneheads you are listening to are based on personal experiences from Iraq, Afghanistan, and other exotic tropical paradises. The opinions expressed on the USERV radio show are solely those of the hosts and contributors, and not those of any agency of the United States government, expressly including but not limited to the Department of Defense or any branch of the military. Neither do the idiotic statements of these rambling buffoons reflect the views of USERV.com or the VA Mortgage Center. If they knew it was good for them, they'd find real talent as quickly as possible. The site is not designed, authorized, sanctioned, or affiliated by or with any agency of the United States government, expressly including but not limited to the Department of Defense or any branch of the military. Listeners accept and agree to this disclaimer and the use of any information accessed from this podcast. These guys serve to protect your freedom. If you don't like what they have to say, exercise it and leave. And there you have it, the views and opinions of everyone on the show, including me, Army, talking to you, are my opinions only and do not reflect the military. All right, so we've got our first guest on the line, and again, like we said, we've got Sam Fiddler on tonight. He's our first guest. You can check him out at www.votefiddler.org. That's F-I-D-L-E-R. Sam, welcome to the USERV radio show and podcast with CJ and Troy. How you doing tonight?
Hi, guys. Doing pretty good tonight.
Awesome. So where are you?
I'm based out of Utah, the Salt Lake Valley. West side of Salt Lake Valley.
Oh, okay.
Where the district is.
Well, that's awesome. And you're running over there?
Yeah, running for state senate.
You need to run against that mayor is what you need to do.
Well, I'm not in Salt Lake City itself. I'm not in that. Actually, the three little suburbs of the Salt Lake City, well, distant suburbs, we're about 20 miles out.
What town is that? I got a lot of family out in that area.
It includes three towns, actually. We're on the border,
of
three of them. That's West Valley City, Taylorsville, and Kearns, which is actually an unincorporated area.
Okay, awesome. Well, yeah, you got some small area there. All right. Okay. Well, I said you got some small towns there. Actually, I guess it's probably pretty populated, isn't it? Well, what's the population out there?
The Salt Lake Valley is filled from one end of it to the other, both sides, and it's just a big metropolitan area
okay.
Now.
I haven't been over that way in quite a while. I've got family that lives in Provo. We go out there and see him quite often. As a matter of fact, I think my wife is going down there this weekend. But, yeah, it is. It's a beautiful place. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your history. I understand you're a military veteran, so to talk about that, I think. Is that correct? Do I have my facts right?
Yes. Joined the Utah National Guard when I turned 17. That was just over 25 years ago. I've spent time on active duty with 3rd Group. I took Special Forces qualification course for a couple of years. Gave that up, came back home, and returned to 19th Special Forces Group in Utah here. I've deployed to Afghanistan twice.
Okay. Uh-oh. Did we lose him?
Yep, still here.
Oh, okay. I heard a bunch of static, and then he disappeared.
The latest... year and a half I've been working in Iraq for the State Department.
Okay. So how did that prepare you when you got out of the military service? How did that prepare you for the afterlife, I guess you could call it, for going into the civilian in the civilian world? How did you get into the State Department?
Well, I'm still in the National Guard, so let that be clear.
Awesome.
And so there's no real afterlife yet, but the work is a lot of the same. I was providing security, PSD type work for the State Department out there, which they really draw on a lot of military experience in order to do that.
Okay. And now, what made you decide that you wanted to run for office?
Well, I've been the type of person, if there's adequate leadership, let's go ahead and let them lead. And I'm more than willing to follow and make sure things are accomplished from behind the scenes. I've been it my entire military career. I'm an NCO, not an officer. I've never been one to try to really stretch my ego or look for a power trip by any stretch of the imagination. But here now, I'm seeing a lot of problems that we've got in across the nation that's creeping in, and I guess you could say infecting Utah even. And so it's time for me to step up, to stop complaining, start doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like I don't know if you've noticed this, but it seems that these past couple of years have just been, veterans just kind of flooding the primaries and flooding, local races throughout the country. Is that something that you've seen as well? And what's your take on how you think military people can do in public office as opposed to someone who doesn't have any military service? What makes you think that military people are more qualified or less qualified than the typical civilian population for what we do?
Well, obviously for qualifications, the legal qualifications are pretty low. But as far as getting quality people up there, you've got to keep in mind that the military service, it's a service thing.
Uh-oh. Hang on. Are you there? I can barely hear you. Is it just me?
No, he's very faint. Okay.
Sorry,
I can hear you, but just barely. I don't know if our chat room can hear you better than we can. I don't know if it's something with the switchboard or what, but it's almost like you're muted. I can just barely make you out. Do you want to
nothing with the switchboard.
Okay. Hey, so that we can get you in there, would you mind just calling right back or having us call you back and see if we can get the connection a little bit better?
I'm going to try it.
Yet, Sam.
Different line here real quick if I can.
Oh, there we go. I think I hear you now.
You hear me now?
I can hear you now.
All right. Technical difficulties here.
That's all right. It's probably just the NSA.
Yeah, either that or my last employers.
Okay, so I'm sorry. You were talking about the qualifications of, veterans serving in public office, and that's not
And that, you know, the military service, you know, we're service-oriented to begin with. And so we're there to serve, to make sure things, and we're, it's really a proactive living environment in general. You know, you get out and you make sure things happen. That, as I see it, applies very well into what a lot of people are looking for, and I hate to call myself a politician, but a lot of people are looking for to fill these positions. You know, it's somebody that and it's my intent to be someone of service. I'm not there to make a lifelong career out of being a politician. I'm not going to try it. Opportunity for me to make sure.
Uh oh, you just lost them again.
We're losing you again, Sam.
Hey, Marcus, can you get his number down and maybe try to recall back?
Yeah, I've got his number. Hold on.
Okay,
hey,
I don't hear him at all.
This is the joy of live internet radio. You know, you just never know what.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
All right,
isn't
well,
it?
If he can hear us, we're going to call him right back, and hopefully we'll get a better connection with him. But in the meantime, you can. Hey, if you got questions for him, by all means, you can call in. Call into the show and ask him a question. You can also post it in the chat room there. But also, you can find out more about him by going to Vote Fiddler.
Fiddler.
F-I-D-L-E-R. Fiddler. VoteFiddler.org. You can also call our toll-free number, 866-696-9150. 866-696-9150. If you got a question
he just sent me a number that we can try to call. So if you hang on just a second, we'll dial out to him. So let me put it in here real quick.
All right. Well, while you're doing that, you do that. I want to direct everyone's attention also to.
This is
going to
bring him
blocker.
Directly back into the show. So I'm going to hit the button. It's going to bring him directly back in.
All right.
So there's no direct attention to anything here.
Hey, go ahead, do it. Wait.
No, because he's coming in right now. There's
that's the way we roll.
Yeah, that's how we roll. Sam, do we have you back?
Do you have me?
Yeah, we got you, Sam.
All right.
We were just playing the Marine that. For him, waiting on you.
I appreciate that, though, Sam. CJ, I do appreciate that. It's like, I'm Army. Leave me alone.
Oh, we got stuff for the Army, too?
All right, we got Sam back, then.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Are you there? I'll keep shutting off my music.
The Marine does.
Dang it.
Okay.
All
get
right.
back to the
Sam, you there?
DJ. You're being very, look at scroll tonight.
All right. Let's try this. Let's try. Hey, this is the joy of internet radio here. You're experiencing all the technical difficulties, but at least we don't have to worry about commercials. All right. Let's go ahead and let's move on. I think I don't want to ask you the same question three times, Sam, and I guess – Do you have a particular platform that you're going to be running on as you run for this office?
Well, there are a number of things I plan on running on.
that, the first of which is it has a lot to do with some of the political environment coming out of Washington, D.C. right now. I've seen too many times they've tried to pull the Commerce Clause on us, and it's really eating the states up. I'd like to honestly see about doing a grassroots up, you know, states level up, amendment to the Constitution if we have to at least clarify the Commerce Clause and let people understand that to regulate means to make regular and not to control.
Right. Yeah, and it seems like the federal government seems to be doing that a lot more lately. Do you see or support do you see in Utah, and do you support other states filing these lawsuits against the federal government for their breach of states' rights?
Yeah, Utah's one of the 10 that I'm aware of right now that is suing over the health care bill and
right.
constitutionality. And you know, we've got a great adjutant general down here that's doing a great job. He's been real popular amongst a lot of my peers in a number of issues, including gun rights.
Well, it sounds like I either need to talk softer or are you? Because you're kind of light on the volume there. So, and then when I start talking, I guess I'm blowing everyone's speakers out. But I am kind of a loud guy. I mean, I'm an NCO as well. But I guess we have to ask you to bring your NCO out so that people can hear you a little bit better. And we'll figure out whatever the technical issues are somehow. Let's see. How long have you been out on campaigning? And your voting cycle is this November, correct?
Yes. The general election can be this November.
Okay.
I've been at this for almost 2 years. My brother ran for the same seat 2 years ago. He would have decided that I'll be the one to run this time around.
It's like a family thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like a tag team.
Campaign manager this time around, so yes.
Okay. And is the feedback pretty good for your campaign?
I'm starting to get a lot of support, at least on the Republican conservative side around out here. And, well, Utah's got to be one of the most conservative states in the union. The actual campaign season for me is just beginning. Utah does think a little bit different than most states, where we have a series of precinct meetings, which just occurred this past Tuesday, just 2 days ago, where we elect delegates for both county and state conventions, and we apply, or we'll send those guys up to decide who's going to represent the parties in an effort to pass an actual primary. And so with that going, I'm the only Republican that's filed for this position, so I'll be getting, I expect to get the Republican support coming up this month, and then it's full on from there, race to the finish in November.
Now, who's in the incumbent right now?
Right now, it's a lady by the name of Karen Main. She pretty much inherited the position from her husband when he died in office about 4 years ago.
Okay. And is she a liberal?
Well, she's a Democrat in Utah, so I don't know.
Okay.
Consider that too liberal in order to survive in the state.
So she voted for the health care as well?
Well, she, state legislature, so.
Oh, state legislature. My gosh. Something wrong with me. Okay, state legislature. Gotcha. That makes all the difference. What do you see really quick? We're gonna wrap up here. We got our next one up. What do you see as the biggest issue facing Utah?
Right now, it is the health care bill and the encroachment of the federal government. The federal government owns just over 67% of the state of Utah. Their state trust fund or trust property that's set up for school trust funds that the state doesn't have access to because they're locked in, surrounded by federal property. and a number of, let's say, the health care bill and general 10th Amendment violations, if you want to call it that, that the government's been imposing on the states, and especially Utah. And really like to see about continuing to tell the state or the federal government to keep their distance. Because the, you know, if you look back in the history of the United States, particularly the oath of enlistment from the military, up until, I believe it was just the 60s, the actual oath of enlistment specifically addressed the states in a plural as opposed to the current singular. And, you know, it's not, we're not the United States, you know, it's not one country, but the actual definition of a state itself implied autonomy. And we should see about bringing that back and giving the states more control over their own, because government is handled much better at a local level.
Now, we've got a question from the chat room asking, what will you do if you get elected to stop the this abomination of a health care bill at the state level?
Well, first off, I'll support our local attorney general in the lawsuit against the federal government for imposing this unconstitutional mandate on us. And further, I'll probably start pushing for a constitutional convention, one that's run by the states and not by Congress.
Yeah. Now, you know, there's a lot of talk about this, and I guess we'll wrap up on this point. There's a lot of talk about, you know, these 10th Amendment lawsuits, and there's a lot of controversy and opinion about whether or not these things will work. Assuming that they do or don't work, do you think there's a legitimate fear that we could possibly face something similar to another civil war based on states' rights?
I think we're a long ways away from that. There's a lot of unrest, but it's on the political level here. I don't see people getting ready to be up in arms, whereas, if you're familiar with that period in history, there was a lot of violence and unrest over the entire thing. Plus, you know, one of the things I like to do is to refresh my memory, read the Declaration of Independence. And our fathers outlined very clearly what their idea of a legitimate reason for rebellion, and we're nowhere near that yet. We have the opportunity still to voice our concerns to the political
Absolutely.
Process. We need to make sure that happens.
Yeah, and the Declaration makes it clear that, you know, egregious violations, and, you know, I don't think we're anywhere near what our ancestors went through against the British. I mean, we're getting much closer than we've ever been, or we are much closer than we've ever been. But, you know, when we don't have troops quartered in our homes, and we're not yet quite yet up to 60% and 70% taxes, and all these other things that were quite egregious. You know, we still have representation, things like that. But yeah, it's just a question that comes up, and, you know, obviously smart people, you know, basically conservatives, when I say smart people, know that, you know, we're too far from that. But I think the lawsuits, even if they don't necessarily win, will at least send a message to the federal government that, you know, they need to back off. Anyway, but hey, Sam, we want to thank you for coming on, but we want to give you a chance to say anything that you wanted to put out there first, and also if you could publicize your website again, and any other points you'd like to get out before we let you go.
Sure, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to each of you this evening. And once again, website, it's all there at votefiddler.com or .org. We have both of them lined up.
Oh, okay.
In there, provide whatever support you can. I can use all the help possible. My opponent receives contributions in the thousands from unions from around the country. I'm not going to have that. You can outspend me probably 10-1 in this campaign, but I can outwork her 10-1. That's what I plan on doing here.
Yeah.
So website in the chat room. You can go ahead and look on there. There's a PayPal link in there if you can do that. If you can't, leave me a comment, something that I can throw up for an endorsement on the website, let people know that I'm somebody that they can trust and someone that they'll want to represent from our area.
Well, absolutely. And the website, again, is votefiddler.org or votefiddler.com. And we've been talking with Matt Fiddler. He is a National Guard soldier, currently an NCO, Corps Sergeant, lead the way, backbone of the Army. And we want to thank you for your service, and also thank you for, you know, your desire to make a difference in the country through as well as through government service. So thanks again, Matt. And if there's anything else it comes up during our campaign, if you'd love us to bring it to our audience's attention, by all means, look us up again. Is he there? Did we lose him?
Yep, that's still here.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Did you hear all
yeah,
that?
Yeah, sorry. You know, I just lost the connection I was listening on.
Oh, okay, no problem. Well, hey, again, thanks a lot. Now, Marcus, did you talk with Marcus yet prior to coming on? Did you get your information?
Nope.
Did I say Matt?
No,
I said Sam. I'm pretty sure I said Sam. Did I call you Matt?
No.
Okay, yeah. Golly. All right. Anyway, hey, Sam, thanks a lot. Thanks again. Hang on the line. I'm going to get my producer to talk to you, get a little bit of information from you. I'd like to send you a thank you gift. And, again, good luck in your campaign. We'll be watching you.
All right. Really appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, take care. Sam Fiddler, everybody, samfiddler.org, samfiddler.com, 1D, 1 Delta in the last name there. Yet again, another veteran running for office. We like to highlight those, whether they're Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever. We like to highlight the fact that veterans are running for office. And, of course, because I love my country, we typically tend to find conservatives. And I joke, because my good friend Bob Liberal is in the chat room, and I think he's a good guy. I like Bob the Liberal.
Hey, TJ, you know, one thing that's interesting, though, about Sam is most of the people we've talked to that are running for office or have run for office have usually been officers. I don't remember us, not counting Adam Kokesh, that I wouldn't even let's not count him, so I'll just throw that one out there. We won't count that one. But most have been officers or retired officers or something. Very few NCOs that I remember.
You're right, and I think this is the first one I've heard of. Yeah, that's so true. So I don't know. Yeah,
and not just in the National Guard, but in one of only two National Guard Special Forces units. I'm sure, since he had taught for SFAS and stuff like that. So an SF NCO, Green Beret NCO, and still trying to step up and serve. You know, not just satisfied with giving once by giving for his country and serving, but trying to make a difference in his community. Very, very commendable.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's also a mill blogger, I understand. So there's another plus on his side for writing and all that kind of stuff. So, all right. Now, did we get Matt yet? Or is
I don't.
Is he offended by me calling him a loser?
Well, we can still talk trash about him. Or his better half, Jimbo, and maybe he'll call in. I don't know.
Hey, Bernard's in there. We can talk to Matt Bernard. Have him call in.
Yeah, he hasn't really run for office, but he's doing a lot of great stuff. You know, Matt could call in and tell us how, even though you were there too, CJ, and you haven't given us really an update on how the San Antonio Soldiers Angels thing went.
You're right.
We could talk about that for a few minutes, or maybe Matt could call in. You guys could talk about that. I saw some pictures, not really incriminating ones, but I didn't hear a lot about how that went.
It went pretty well. Let's see if Matt will call in. I asked him in the chat room if he'd be willing to call in, but all I got was a ha ha. So he might be. He's a shy guy. He likes to kind of keep to himself, and he's bashful, and
Unless you're talking business. I've talked a lot of business with him. He'll talk when it has to do with business, that's for sure. You know, because he's trying to run one. You know, he's running Bryanstone Computing, doing some great stuff with that, and training vets and getting them employed and teaching them new skills.
Well, exactly.
And
I'd like to talk to him because he had a great deal to do with that whole event, the Soldier event in San Antonio. And I'd like to, you know, give him a plug on that if he'll call in and give him a plug on it. If not, I'm gonna I'm just gonna talk about it, and I'm gonna embarrass him by telling him the great thing he did for Soldier's Angels that day. And so I'll give him another minute, and I'll start talking about it and figure out what's going on. He's just kind of, I think I see him blushing through the monitor. Not sure.
Why don't you give us a little rundown of how that went and what the event was like, and let our listeners know, and myself, because not all of us could be at that great event.
Yeah, and I'll tell you my opinion of it, and if anyone else calls in that was there, we'd like to hear from you as well. Actually, anyone that was there that's in the chat room, call in. But on when was this? Last Friday, I think. Yeah, last Friday, I went down to San Antonio, and first of all, I was running late. I couldn't get out of the office. I was doing travel orders and all kinds of junk, and I wanted to get out of there a lot earlier than I did. So the thing started, I think, at 5 o'clock, and I didn't even leave my office until almost 4 o'clock. So I was behind the power curve before I even left. Anyway, I get down there, about halfway down there, I stopped and got changed into my blue uniform, my new ASU class A's, and because it was a posh event. It was actually seeing Uncle Jimbo and Matt in a suit and tie was quite laughable and funny. So I'm kind of like, oh, I guess Matt Bernard's on hold. Anyway, drove down there, got completely lost. Keep in mind, the event was from 5 to 8. My GPS took me completely on the other side of town, because I guess that road runs all the way, and I was on the wrong side. I didn't get there until about 7:20 or 7:30, and by the time – and here's how I found the place. I got fed up and said, that's it, I'm leaving. I plugged in one of my favorite restaurants of all time, Cracker Barrel, into my GPS and started driving to the nearest Cracker Barrel. And lo and behold, on the way to the Cracker Barrel, I look off the highway, and there's this huge Soldier's Angel logo on the side of this building. Huge, bright, beautiful. So that's how I found the place, by accident, on the way to Cracker Barrel. And got in there. Oh, my gosh, this place is awesome. There were a lot of Milt Loggers there. Matt was there. Matt Bernard was there. Matt Burton, Uncle Jay, Chuck Ziegenfuss. Beth.
Hey, CJ?
Yeah.
CJ, I'm going to – we got Matt Bernard, who called in. Since we bugged him so much, I'm bringing him on right now, so he's on the air. Welcome, Matt, to You Serve Radio yet again, good friend.
Thanks a lot, Troy.
Hey,
CJ, I don't want to
Yeah,
there, but since we got him the
– Matt, part two. But I go in there, and let me tell you, the setup in this place is awesome. It's beautiful, the way they had everything set up, and they had all these interactive screens and all that kind of stuff, and that's where I want to kind of pass it off to Matt, now that he's online, to talk about the whole infrastructure of the network and all that kind of stuff, because he had a big part in that, Matt.
Oh, yeah. Well, appreciate it. I guess any news is good news.
We put you on the spot, huh?
Yeah, put me on the spot. Well, So going back, I guess if you want to take a step back a little bit, back in the November timeframe of last year, Toby Nunn, who is the director of operations in San Antonio, he and I have become really good friends, probably in the last 2 years when I first met him at a MILBlog conference. But he called me up in October and said, hey, you know, we're looking to put all this infrastructure in place, IT related, what do we do? So I kind of gave him the rundown, asked some questions. I said, well, you know what? Let's just do this. I will, if you can bring me out there, I will drop ship equipment out there at my cost, and we'll make it happen. So we set everything up in November, the basic infrastructure, more the skeleton portion of it, so the warehouse/museum can be all set up with regards to network capability to all their touch screens, all their computers, Rhinestone, my company, we set up the server infrastructure and all the configuration and got it going early on. And then few weeks ago, he brought me out there just a few days early to make sure that everything was in place and working as intended, and it was. We got it all squared away. So and then I met up with CJ that night.
Yep, and always good to hang out with Matt and other people. I think everyone was pretty busy.
Yeah. One thing I do want to add, maybe it's a cheap plug, but one of the things that Rhinestone has been doing sort of behind the scenes that isn't widely known is we've been providing, for the most part, all of the laptops that go to Project Valor IT, the laptops that are given to wounded soldiers at Bethesda and Walter Reed and anywhere else in the United States, for that matter, that the laptop with the voice-activated software on it. So one of the things we've been doing, supporting Soldiers Angels in that effort, and, you know, one veteran, or my veteran crew helping veterans, active members on the flip side, it's really a win-win situation for everybody.
Hey, Matt, this is Troy. So I guess it sounds like with all the people that CJ mentioned, it was kind of like a small MilBlog conference or a mini reunion, wasn't it?
Well, there were a lot of MilBloggers for sure. A lot of like-minded philanthropic business owners. I mean, there was the CEO from Green Beans Coffee. You've probably heard of that if you have been deployed. But there were a lot of business people there, too. So it was a mixed bunch.
Yeah, Green Bean, the Starbucks of the Middle East.
yeah.
That's what we call it. But so you went down there. You've been a bit, you know, Matt, you and your company have been a big friends of the Soldiers Angels for a while and done a lot with them. I didn't realize that you had provided a lot of the laptops or had been, and that's phenomenal. I guess what was the, you know, you guys were down there really celebrating the new warehouse and distribution center. I guess what was it just the celebration and honor of that, or any other events that happened during that weekend?
Well, it was the celebration of the grand opening of that warehouse / museum, because it really is. One half is the museum, the other half is the warehouse. But there was some awards to be that were given out. People that have really supported Soldiers Angels and their efforts over the years received awards from, you know, no other than Patty and Jeff Bader. So it was a really great night, and it was just a celebration of everything. The people that have supported the efforts, Soldiers Angels in general. And, you know, kind of giving a good history of where Soldiers Angels came from and where they are now. And, yes, it was a black tie event, although I didn't have a black tie on. I think I had a red tie.
Well, I saw pictures of Jimbo. Even he dressed up, which was impressive.
Hey,
I didn't realize
that. But at the – hey, Troy, not only did he dress up, but at the dinner after the event over at the hotel, he didn't even spill anything on himself.
Wow, you guys must have kept him limited to 2 beers or something.
No, we brought the Coyote Ugly that night, so I think that's where the spillage occurred.
hey, I didn't realize it was half a museum. I guess, this is the first I've heard of that, and I've talked to Toby and the Baders quite a bit. What kind of stuff do they have in there? Is it stuff some soldiers have sent them back? Or I guess give us kind of a description of what's in the museum.
Yeah, no, well, if I were to set up the scene for saying you walk into the museum portion of that building, right as you walk in on the floor is this golden the logo of Soldiers Angels embedded into the floor. Along the ceiling or the wall, the top part of the wall, right below the ceiling, it are, you know, pictures of various soldiers that Soldiers Angels has reached out to. Patty Bader is in a little corner there, but all around the room, you've got a part that talks about the history from when Soldiers Angels began to where they are now. There's a section for the fallen, letters from parents, wives, husbands that, you know, letters that, you know, the family members would receive when the soldiers come back. You know, the family members read these letters and they've responded back to Soldiers Angels saying, hey, thank you for supporting my son, my daughter, my husband, what have you. So there's a section for that. In the corner, there's a touchscreen interactive section where you can look at most of the letters that have been received by Soldiers Angels and pictures and different events through the years. But really what it is it's this sort of combination of what Soldiers Angels is, the various projects that they support, the history, and the people that they've reached out to. It's really just a touching, moving experience if you can go through the entire museum and look at everything. And the interaction is great with some of the various touchscreens that they have.
Right. So how is that? Do you know, not necessarily a spokesman for Soldiers Angels, but how are they marketing this so people know that there's this museum there to kind of see and feel what soldiers say and hear and stuff and not just a warehouse?
That's a tough one for me. I don't know how they're exactly marketing it. I know that they have, they can reach out and touch, their 225,000 plus members instantly through social media. So I think it's mostly through their social media efforts. They do a lot of work with the BAMSI over there and the various organizations that surround that post. So I think what they're trying to do is just, raise brand awareness right there in San Antonio through their efforts that they've been doing for the years.
Okay, all right. Now, are you, to kind of switch topics here a little bit, are you going to be attending the MILBLOG conference here next month?
It looks like I am. I'm procrastinating. I haven't bought my tickets yet, but we'll see. So I could say as of today, I have the intent, but logistical means have not been procured yet.
Gotcha. Well, I hope you do. We're planning for an exciting time, of course, and I don't know if you know or not, but that Thursday night, the 8th, we'd love to have you if you can get down then, because CJ and Marcus and I will be doing the first show ever together, and we're going to be hosting it out of CJ and Marcus's room, it sounds like, and they're welcoming as many people as possible to come on in.
Is it a suite? Because I'll be hanging out in your suite if you have one.
We'll call it a suite. We're not sure what size it is, but we can call it a suite. We can call it whatever we want. But if we cram enough people in there, we'll consider it a hospitality suite.
Yeah, all is well, man. Yeah, if I get down there for sure, we'll definitely link up.
Yeah, it'd be good to see you. And then because you are a close friend of the MILBLOGs, of course, and very involved with, like say, with the Soldiers Angels and all that. Real quick, I'm gonna shift topics on you again. Kind of, I mentioned earlier when I was talking about you, to pressure you to come on, about what you've done for a lot of vets, trying to train them, retool them in the world of information technology. How is that going? Are you making good progress with that? Are you getting guys trained up? I guess any updates on that and what you've done?
Yeah, sure. And allow me just to give a brief sort of background of who I am and what my company is all about. Brynestone is a veteran-owned and veteran-operated company. My classification for a service-disabled veteran-owned business, if we ever want to go into the federal sector. But one of the primary things that we do is we work very closely with the regional Veterans Administration, Voc Rehab and Employment, or Education, however you want to look at it, departments. We take on their veteran clients, train them for a period of time. There's actually a business incentive that employers can utilize where the Veterans Administration will pay up to $10,000 or half the veteran's salary for 6 months, whatever comes first. So we've taken on that so we can train and employ and maximize the amount of veterans that are under our staff. So we've been doing that for a little over a year now. We work with the Veterans Administration. We also work with a couple of nonprofits that have philanthropic efforts to train and assist veterans in their reintegration back into the civilian world. And it's going good. The Veterans Administration actually did a documentary, it's about 15 minutes long, on my company, Brynestone, just last year. And that can be found on our site. And if you don't mind, it's brynestone.net. And the About section has a little documentary. So it's going well. Through the tough times, we're not having a problem. We're just doing and maintaining, a good business ethic, and people appreciate that, and it pays off.
Awesome. Well, hey, man, that's great. I'm glad you're still doing great things, and we're able to, I wasn't really planning to have you on tonight, but I'm glad we got you on tonight because it's good for our people to hear about this and that's phenomenal about the documentary too. CJ, do you got any questions or anything for Matt?
No, Matt, you're the hizzy man. You're the dog diggity. It was good seeing you again and talking to you.
Yeah, no, thank you guys for the sort of impromptu little interview here. I really appreciate it. You guys are doing a great thing, and look forward to seeing you guys at the No Block Conference this year.
Absolutely, man. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right. Appreciate you guys. I'm going to go now.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, later.
All right.
That's a good guy. I like Matt.
Yeah, Matt Bernard from Brian Stone. Great company. He was honored. I'm trying to think. I guess it was, TJ, at the 2-3 No Block conferences ago, the one in Vegas, when Soldiers Angels honored him for the work he's doing for trying to help soldiers returning. While we got a couple minutes here, I just want to real quick plug specifically what we have on our eBay store tonight. There is the Marine coin. Again, I want to say it's is that right? The Marine coin that we've had, and I think
it's
I mentioned
generic coin this week.
Yeah, we're $14 away from hitting the 250. But besides that one, we also have another special edition tonight, and it's one of the only ones I've ever seen. Actually, I can credit my father for buying this. He bought a couple just to give us to auction off and sell off because he wants to see CJ and Mark shave his head like his own son. But it's a World War II veteran coin. And, you know, back in those days, you know, coins weren't really a big thing back in the World War II days. So they didn't really have that kind of thing that they, you know, passed and coined each other. But this one, it's engravable, and it's honoring those that have served in World War II. So it's kind of unique. It's the first time I'd ever seen one like that. But, yeah, this one, and we got another one coming up here probably next week or 2 weeks. So it's from another war. But check it out on our eBay store. We've got the World War II veteran coin, and we've got the fallen service member coin, both up that are just out. No bids yet, so go out there and be the first. That's my plug.
Hey, did you guys talk about the barbecue the next day when I was gone?
No, we didn't. You want to?
Yeah, right after on Saturday, Soldiers Angels hosted a huge barbecue for Wounded Warriors out at Fisher House at over at Bamsey. And, tons of people were out there. They had a huge barbecue. Best Buy was out there. They sponsored most of the barbecue, so they had Best Buy employees out there manning the spoons and the forks and stuff. Delicious barbecue. I took my family down there with me, my family from San Antonio, and they gave away some laptops as well to some wounded soldiers. And it was interesting because as my nieces and nephews were playing out in the park at the Fisher House, I was sitting there with my brother and sister-in-law, and I got up to go because here's the funny thing. When I drove down there, I was in such a hurry to leave that morning because I leave the house at 5 o'clock in the morning to go to work, and I forgot to pack my clothes. So I had my dress uniform already pre-positioned in the car, and then I had the uniform that I was wearing, but I forgot to pack regular clothes for the weekend. So I planned on staying the entire weekend down there in San Antonio. So anyway, the next day I recognized the fact that I had no clothes other than my PT uniform, my ASU, and my ACU, my camouflage. So I went out on the way to the barbecue because I decided just to wear my PTs again. Disgusting. Drove out to Walmart and got one of those cheap $7.50 shirts. It was a G.I. Joe Real American Hero t-shirt. And so I'm sitting out there, and I was talking to the guys from Ranger Up. Nick was out there. I was talking to Nick and was commenting on his shirt. He's got that unapologetically American Vietnam Wall shirt. And I was kind of joking about my G.I. Joe shirt. And he said, he's like, man, you want another shirt? And I was like, why, did you bring me some shirts? Like, hell yeah. I was like, well, crap, yeah, I love a shirt. So we went out there, and he opened up his trunk of his car and said, all right, which one do you want? And got myself another awesome Ranger Up shirt because I can never have enough of those. And anyway, that was pretty awesome. And so then they had – not only did they have the barbecue, but they also had a magician that was going around doing magic tricks for the kids. And this guy was phenomenal. I think I took some videos of, you know, these kids or this magician doing magic tricks. I don't think I post them yet because they were at my FU's, and I want to ask permission before I post them. But, I mean, just the coolest things. They had the greatest time. All the kids there were having a great time, and all the Wounded Warriors. But anyway, when I got up and left to go with Nick, I guess the guy next to me that was sitting next to me is a Wounded Warrior, and he got a laptop as well. But, I mean, I'm telling you, if you don't support an organization like Soldiers Angels, they're the real deal. That's why we have decided on the USERV radio show, nothing against Fisher House, because Fisher House is also the real deal. But, you know, let's face it, Fisher House has all kinds of corporate sponsors, and they rake in a lot of money. They've got a lot of oversight and, you know, attention.
Yeah, I mean, they're huge. They got serious corporate sponsors, and even though they could use it, I mean, Soldiers Angels, you know, could use anything they can get.
So, I mean, I just love what Soldiers Angels does, and that's why, you know, we got together as a group, as a team, and decided that, you know what, we could be more beneficial helping Soldiers Angels than Fisher House. Although both organizations could use everything they can get, you know, I've always, the wounded and fallen soldiers have always held a special place in my heart, and so it's our pleasure, I think, to be able to support Soldiers Angels and to go out there and literally see firsthand what they do for our troops by handing out these laptops and some of these awards to the, you know, corporate sponsors that make everything work was just – it was a humbling experience. You know, you really felt pride inside that you in some small way you helped to make that happen.
CJ, real quick on Soldiers Angels, let me just highlight, if you haven't, you know, I don't know, you know, our listeners, anyone's ever checked out my blog, A Boo Hammer, or reads The Sandbox, or Afghan Quest, but if you haven't checked it out, you need to head over to AfghanQuest.com, read Old Blue's blog post called Some Things Don't Need Embellishment, where he writes in detail about him spending a day with Marianne Phillips, who we talked about last week with little Connor. She's a soldier. She runs Soldiers Angels Germany. And read Old Blue's essentially testimony of what he experienced with her at Landstuhl Hospital. And if that doesn't humble you and just, you know, make you proud to be an American, but make you want to just reach out and do something for this group, nothing will. I mean, she is in her own right. She's definitely an angel. And I know she would hate that we talk about her like that. And she's not looking for anything for herself. But what she has done for soldiers of multiple countries, it's phenomenal, and Old Blue does a great job of documenting that. I don't know if you had if you read that yet, CJ.
I haven't yet, but I definitely will now. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's called Some Things Don't Need Embellishment. It's the latest one he wrote on 8 March, and it is a humbling post to read, and it was an emotional event. I'll put it that way.
Wow, awesome. Well, yeah, I mean it's. I just can't say enough about him. And that new warehouse and area there inside, you really got to check it out. And I don't know how in detail Matt went into the displays, but the touchscreen displays were
phenomenal.
Yeah,
he talked about that.
Okay.
He talked about that, because I asked him in detail about the museum. I had never even heard that they were going to have a – I think I heard Toby one time tell me something about it. I didn't realize like that was going to be the main thing, that it was going to be the intent of a part of it was to be a pure museum. And I asked Matt, and he didn't really know. Maybe you know, CJ, you heard better. What is their? How are they trying to get the word out that they actually have a museum there? How are they marketing that, for lack of a better term?
Well, I can tell you they're in with the Chamber of Commerce. They work very close to the Chamber of Commerce. As a matter of fact, here's a funny story. As they were putting up the sign, the big giant Soldiers Angels light up sign on the outside of the building. The Chamber of Commerce guy happened to be driving by and goes, what's that? And so he goes over there and starts talking to him and got the Chamber of Commerce involved. And so that's one way of getting the word out as well. I guess they help facilitate getting volunteers over to help package and those kinds of things. But I'm telling you, it works for me, and it's got to work for other people too. When you drive by and you see that big, giant Soldiers Angels emblem, that's big enough. That's good enough as, you know, a way of getting people in there.
Yeah, I imagine it will get their attention, especially in a large military presence like that. Hey, we got our next guest called in. Yeah. There's I'm sure it's probably normal in the daytime hours, but
I want to get Patty on. We'll have to get Patty on the show and talk about it.
Yeah, we'll have to get her on, definitely.
Or Toby
will always talk to us. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we'll have Toby on April 8th. I'm pretty sure he'll be there by then, hopefully. I know I don't think Patty's going to be there, but we can at least get him on. So we got our next guest called in, and Marcus is bringing him over now from the green room or red room or whatever we want to call it, in honor of him being a former Marine. You know, I think we'll call it the red room, because they got that sharp-looking red on their uniforms. You think that's fair, CJ?
Yeah, no. I can't go for that.
All right. Well, I did come in. All right,
so
I knew that was coming.
We have a Marine guest tonight, so I got away with the Marine Corps intro tonight. Yes.
And you know what? And you know what, Marcus? After last week when it kept messing up and we had a Marine guest, this is 2 weeks in a row, Marine guests on. So that's no one can say we don't reach across the service aisle. But it messed up last week, so you earned the right to be able to play more than 2 seconds of it, that's for sure.
That's awesome.
But anyways, I want to welcome on YouServe Radio, a very busy guy right now as he's going all across the country, premiering and his movie is in theaters, Mr. Mike Scotti. Welcome, Mike, to YouServe Radio.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. It's a great privilege and an honor, and I appreciate your time.
Hey, no problem. And just to let everyone know before we get into our normal questioning, Mike is – you'll probably correct me on the title, but, I mean, essentially the – filmmaker, and I'm sure part editor and producer, in addition to, you know, the production company of the movie Severe Clear. And Mike, you know, we have people on because it's called You Served, whether they've served or someone in their family has, we usually kind of go into telling us a little bit about your background with the military and or, you know, any of your family's history you may have, if you wouldn't mind kind of enlightening our listeners to that.
Sure. You know, just quickly about my background, I joined the United States Marine Corps Reserves as an enlisted Marine in 1995. I went to Parris Island at 18 years old, and I did 4 years in the Reserves kind of in parallel while getting my undergraduate degree down at University of Miami in Florida. Made it to the rank of corporal, went to school infantry and all that, was an anti-tank tow gunner. Then when I graduated from undergrad, went to Officer Candidate School in Quantico, was commissioned a second lieutenant, became an artillery officer, and did one tour in Afghanistan. Actually, we were the first guys kind of going in, you know, obviously after like all the special forces and everything, but kind of the first conventional troops going in as part of the 15th MEU. We had already been deployed prior to September 11th. We were actually in Australia on September 11th. So we ended up being the first guys kind of going into Afghanistan, securing Camp Rhino and all that. And then in 2003, I was, part of OIF-1 as part of the 1st Marine Division's Regimental Combat Team 1, and I was an artillery officer with attached to an infantry battalion, 1st Battalion, 4th Marines. So that's kind of my military background. I got out in 2003 as a 1st Lieutenant, then spent another 4 years in the inactive ready reserves. I got promoted to captain, but, you know, obviously that was just an administrative promotion. Didn't even show up, whatever. And, then I got honorably discharged in 07. So that's kind of my story.
Okay. All right. Before we get into the movie, I want to kind of go back into some of your early deployment in Afghanistan. And the reason I want to ask about that is a while back we had on both two guests. We had on Eric Blem, who wrote the book The Only Thing We're Dying For, and Major Steve Amerine, who is the ODA team leader. That Camp Rhino was mentioned in that book pretty considerably when that first ODA team got hit on December 2001. Were you there on Rhino when that happened, when those guys got evac'd out, that first team that went in from the south?
I was. I was actually was there from late November to early January. Late November 2001 to early January of 2002. And I can remember them kind of medevacking guys back, and it wasn't kind of my turn on watch because we were manning the perimeter at that point. And so I kind of wandered back to the CP area, to the battalion kind of headquarters area, and actually saw some of our guys and some of the Northern Alliance guys getting carried in on stretchers. And it was my first, I was young, I was about 26. It was my first glimpse of what combat does to people. And I'll never forget it because one of the Special Forces guys had exactly the same watch that I had on as his arm was kind of swinging as they carried him in the stretcher, into the battalion, the 8 quarters or whatever. And, it hit me freaking right between the eyes, and I was like, wow, this is real. So, I actually lost friends on September 11th because I grew up in the New Jersey area and kind of was New Jersey, New York-centric growing up. And so I'd already lost civilian friends from high school, which was totally, flipping me out. And then at that point, we hadn't really engaged the Taliban that much. We got probed a couple of times. But, to see, an American warrior, being carried in our stretcher with all kinds of things attached to him, obviously not in good shape, it was, the reality sets in very, very quickly. So.
Right. Well, just interesting. I guess another small world story that you were there in that same base, which of course, like I say, Jason Emery was the ODA commander of that team. But anyways, I just, when you mentioned you're at Rhino, I just want to ask about that. So anyways, let me kind of go, and you mentioned the friend, and I had a note about that from the movie, and Beth, I can't remember last name, start with a Q, if I remember
Quigley.
Right. Yeah. Quigley. You carried her, in the movie you talk, you kind of voice over the letter, I think, that you wrote to her sister. She was a friend of yours in high school, you guys were in the same classes. The impression I got was not necessarily really super close, but you knew her close enough that when she was killed on September 11th, you took that to heart and you carried her photo with you all the way through into Iraq. Is that correct?
Yeah, I basically carried the photo while on the deployment to Iraq. I didn't have the photo with me when we were in Afghanistan because we were actually already deployed. And I found out that Beth and another buddy, Pete Apollo from Redmond Catholic High School, had also been killed. And I knew Beth. You're absolutely right. I knew her. I wasn't, super close with her or anything, but it was enough to definitely affect me. And just the fact that, as the voiceover kind of says in the film, that she reminded me of, things that everything in life that was good, and she had a sense of kindness that was nice to be around. And just to think that she, died the way she died, it was just, it's very profound. It's a significant emotional event. And, so I carried her picture with me into Iraq, as kind of almost like spiritual guidance, so.
Right. Kind of a reminder of why you're there type of thing, or?
Yeah, absolutely. Reminder of why we're there. A reminder that if I ever start feeling sorry for myself on the battlefield, think about what she went through. It's just almost like a source of strength,
Right. Yeah. It's pretty phenomenal. Yeah, so it's good. I'm glad, like I say, you brought that up, and I'm glad you felt comfortable in talking about that. When I watched the movie, I got to say the first thing that came to mind, I think it's lately you guys have been, I think the production company's pitch has been, the real Hurt Locker or something like that. And anyone who's read my blog or follows know how I feel about that. It's been pretty widely distributed how disturbed I was with that movie and how upset I was with it. But when I looked at it, I saw this and went, did the people that created Generation Kill see your movie first? Because that's what I saw was your Severe Clear being the inspiration for that entire miniseries. So I'm going to kind of ask you, what was your thoughts if you saw Generation Kill? And if so, I mean, what was your thoughts on that and reflection on that?
Well, it's interesting that you picked up on that. There was no overlap with, production or anything like that. It's interesting because Regimental Combat Team 1, Reconnaissance Battalion, which was Nate Fick's unit, Nate Fick being the lieutenant, it was actually a friend of mine. We were actually both at Rhino together. We were both in 1-1 together back in 01. But, I went to 1-4 and then he went to Recon Battalion. We followed the same route almost all the way up to Baghdad. And there's times in the film, we feel very powerful right now. We've got a lot of, stuff going over this road. And one half of the road is Amtrak, which was 1-4, and the other half of the road heading in the same direction was the recon guys. And So because we followed the same route, we saw a lot of the same stuff. What's interesting is that there's a culminating point. If you remember the scene with the little girl,
the pink shoes.
It's the same thing. It's the same. We drove up, you know, they drove out, and we drove up, you know, a half hour later. And I didn't know that until 3 years later when I read Evan Wright's book, Generation Kill. And I was like, oh, my God, that was Nate Fick's platoon. And I knew Nate Fick, you know, so all these, it was just like all these things were kind of tied together, which was interesting. You know, I had a buddy who basically said that Severe Clear is the movie that Generation Kill tried to be. So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I took it as, yeah, Generation Kill is kind of the polished, Hollywooded, you know, miniseries version of the rawness of Severe Clear. Even though Severe Clear is very polished, I think he has a very good production and editing and the sounds and voiceovers and stuff. But yeah, I would take it as that. It was almost like that was the raw version of Generation Kill. But you know, one thing that stuck out was that I liked about Generation Kill was it did not hide or become politically correct and, should I say, and hide the soldier, a soldier or Marine sixth sense of humor that we all have when we've been deployed and when we're around each other. And yours didn't either. I mean, you know, the very homoerotic comedy or sense of humor that we have. And I guess kind of why did you decide to show that, or why was that included? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to show, and you know, there's like an arc to the whole film, right? I mean, I wanted to show what it's like to be, you know, in an infantry unit or in, you know, really in any unit in the Marine Corps. You know, it's the grab-assing that goes on, and it's the you know, the dark humor, all that stuff, and stuff that, you know, Marines find really funny. I still find it funny to this day, you know, and I always find it funny. And it's you know, that's the real stuff that makes the film really resonate with audiences, because it's not, you know, it's not the poster boy Marine, which is, it's kind of both sides of the same coin. I mean, Marines keep their honor pure. You know, we are, you know, we maintain physical fitness and everything. But also the average age is, you know, as it is in the Army and the other armed forces, 19 and a half years old. And, you know, it is what it is. And I figured, you know, we might as well throw it in there to keep the film honest and to keep it, to keep the audience kind of showing them what it really means to be a Marine and what it means to be a Marine that's 19 years old getting ready to go into a war. And, you know, my sense tells me that that's timeless. I mean, it was probably the same for the guys going to Vietnam as it was Korea, as it was World War II, or as World War I. These things are all timeless, and they really don't change that much from generation to generation.
Right, right. And you know, you have to have that sixth sense of humor to get to manage through all the other BS, right, that you deal with, and you know, whether it's from higher or from the enemy.
Exactly. Well put.
Yeah. Now, one interesting thing I liked about it was you used a lot of news report voiceovers. Of course, I'm sure when you shot it, you were just shooting it, and that was probably a production company thing or something. But I guess it was just interesting how you used that. Was that the intent to kind of tie in the viewer to, oh, I remember when I heard that, and that's kind of what was going on? Or what was the thought behind using all the voiceovers?
Yeah, that's a technique. It kind of comes from two different directions. First was that I actually had a small shortwave handheld radio that my parents had given me as a gift, because when I got out of the Marine Corps, I was going to just go backpacking around the world for like a year and a half. And so I had it with me, and that's how we got our news, was on BBC, because we didn't, you know, you don't really know what's going on with the rest of the war, and there's really kind of not a better source than getting it from BBC, which is interesting because BBC didn't seem to have too much of a political bent on it. It seemed to just kind of report, and, you know, it is what it is. And when the director, Christian Fraga from CERT Productions, kind of dug through everything, that kind of resonated with him as, oh, this is interesting. They got their news from the BBC, so why don't we have the audience get their news from the BBC? So anything that's, like, at the tactical level, you know, it's my voiceovers, like, living day-to-day, you know, very personal, first-person narrative. But when you kind of get a moment of levity and you kind of go up to the 10,000-foot view, that's when it pulls away to the maps and it kind of, so the audience understands where we fit in to the bigger picture. And that's a technique that's been used in films before, actually. Remember the film The Warriors from the 1970s about the gangs in New York? They did it very, very effectively. So, it's a very interesting film technique, and, you know, that's the filmmaking aspect of the film. So.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, that was
That was it definitely tied it together. Like I say, I kind of got the impression it was because you had like the voiceovers from when you were watching Secretary of State Colin Powell do his presentation to the UN. It kind of just tied it all together. So it almost gave the viewer, when this was happening, I remember that on the news. That's where these guys were. Kind of thought, I guess, was what I had. Did you ever intend, when you start off with you filming it as you're packing your gear and stuff, did you ever intend this? You talk about in there a few times about a book when you're kind of narrating part of it. You talk about in my book this and that. And I don't know if you've written a book yet or how that's coming, but did you ever intend this to become a movie? Were you just filming it just to capture it and see what you do with it later?
Yeah, I mean, I had absolutely no, aspirations to make it into a film or else I would have done things a lot differently. But, Christian and I have talked a lot about that, and he said it's a good thing because, I'm not a cinematographer. I would have tried too hard, and it just wouldn't have worked. So really what I've used it for, I wanted to just videotape things as notes for like a video journal so that I could go back to it and pull the pages from the book from there. So, the concept being I'd watch, 10 minutes of video and then I'd go write for a week basically around that. And then I'd go watch another 10 minutes and write for another week around that. But really, I have not written a book. I mean, there's probably 200 or 300 pages of just stream of consciousness and thought and journal entries sitting on a shelf. In 04, Christian locked me in a room with an assistant and basically said, get everything out of your head down on paper. And just, you don't want to type it, you can just dictate it and Shoal write it all down. And we'd watch all the video over and over again, go through all the pictures, go through all the journal entries, and just got it all down on paper. And that's what Christian used, kind of, he internalized that, and then that's what he kind of used. And that took him, 8 months to get through everything and really internalize it the right way to where he felt he was comfortable enough knowing what it, what I went through, what it means to be a Marine, and I had him read some other books. And really, the movie is really the book for that phase. The book that I'm considering writing, and we'll see where all this kind of goes, is what it's like to come home from a war. And I don't know if you saw this piece I did on CNN. I did a big op-ed on CNN a couple weeks ago that was, top story for like half a day. And actually they called me back. I'm going to be in the studio on Monday, talking about some issues of PTSD and troops coming home and all that stuff. So the real story, I think, now, because, I did nothing special over there, man. I mean, I was there for OIF-1. There's Marines and soldiers who fought in Fallujah and Ramadi and, all these other fights that were 10 times worse than anything I saw. And so the story that's now intimate to me is what it's like to come home from a war and kind of a series of pull-ups that have to take place in order for you to kind of get your life on track, especially if you go from being a combatant to a civilian in like a week, which is what happened to me and a lot of guys that got out the same time I did. So, because you're not surrounded by your buddies, you're not going to work every day with the guys that you fought with, you kind of lose that shared experience with everybody.
Yeah, and it's got to, and I know firsthand myself, but I'm sure you can tell our listeners, it's got to be tough to you're not coming down off it slowly. You're not sitting around the barracks talking about it and decompressing from it. It's almost overnight, right? And
yeah, I mean, literally. I mean, I wrote in the CNN piece, I was talking to, like, I mean, I was at a wedding, like, literally 48 hours after I got home. And, I'm going through the processing, getting processed out of the Marine Corps, and that was, like, a five-day thing. And I'm sitting there in my blues, and I'm realizing, and there was no other military people, at the wedding or whatever. And I'm sitting there in my dress blues, and, a week before that, I was, basically in Iraq, on the battlefield or on my way from the battlefield to Kuwait to, start to fly home. And everyone's just looking at me. I'm listening to the general conversation at the table. And I'm just like, what are they talking about? They're talking about their kids and like home life and like, whatever celebrity stuff was going on. And I just realized I said, this is going to be tough because these people must think I'm an alien because I feel like an alien right now because I can relate to absolutely nothing that they're saying. They have absolutely no idea what it is that we just did, what I just went through, or where I just came from. And nobody ever tells you that while you're over there. And it was a shock to me. And I realized, all right, I have a whole other fight to kind of fight now that I'm home. And it's kind of the re-assimilation back into kind of society. And, you know, it takes time. And you can easily kind of swerve off path and go off the rails. And, you know, whether it's hitting a bottle or, you know, ending up in jail or ending up in bar fights or you know, whatever. You know, not getting help if you're depressed or if you have post-traumatic stress or, you know, there's a whole list of things. And, you know, and I founded a charity and I see what happens to people's lives when they come home and that's a whole other story. So,
right.
You know, it's really, you know, there's, and, you know, I'm dedicated a lot of my time to trying to fix the problems that are there. And I'm starting to make this, you know, of troops coming home and not being cared for in the right manner by the government or whatever. And it's pretty clear to me now that the private sector are the ones who are going to take care of our troops when they come home. So I founded this charity called Reserve Aid. We just hit $3 million mark a couple months ago, you know, in donations that have come in over the last couple of years. And, you know, now I'm taking it to the next step because, you know, I'm in Newsweek next week. I'll be in CNN next week. I was in the New York Times. I was in the Wall Street Journal. And now I have a voice. And I'm going to use that voice to kind of fight for, you know, the right, you know, of our guys coming home to have the opportunity to live a good life. You know, there's 5,000 homeless veterans in New York City. And a good portion of those are from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. So they're our generation. And the American public doesn't know that. And when I get done with them, they are going to know that. And then they're going to put pressure on the politicians, and the politicians are going to fund the VA with more money so they're not so overwhelmed. And, you know, they're going to have mental health problems. I mean, these things have to happen because America wants them to happen. It's just that they don't know about it. And so, you know, that's kind of my goal.
That's phenomenal. So you've taken this film, and I imagine that's what's given you that voice, right? That's what's gotten you the ability to get in front of the cameras and get on these shows and then these periodicals to write this stuff?
Yeah,
I mean, is it giving you the jump start? Yeah.
And without the film, I would have no – I mean, I still feel the same way, but I have no voice. And
right. Now, do you blog or do anything on Twitter or anything like that to kind of expand your readers or listeners? I mean, are you doing anything like that? Do you have a blog up that – you can kind of talk about this stuff?
I don't. And you know, I should, and I don't. And, you know, I'd love to talk to you about that. Because when the theatrical is done in a couple of weeks and I'm kind of done running around the country, I'm going to take 2 weeks off, and I'm writing a treatment for a TV show that's pretty much already been funded for the pilot, and then the pilot has to get picked up. And when that kind of whole process starts, that is when I'm going to kind of engage with everything. I mean, the movie itself has been on, you know, Severe Clear has Twitter and everything, but I haven't really engaged the social media like I should, just because, you know, I don't have, you know, I'm all over the place. Like, I was in Vietnam for 7 weeks backpacking. I quit my job in December because I got sick of it, and, you know, I was like, I'm just going to go backpack through Vietnam, do some battlefield studies, you know, go hang out on the beach, and they're like, you need to come home because, you know, your film is getting released. I was like, oh, wow. So it was totally unexpected. And I kind of wasn't ready for it, you know. So,
right, not too many people go to Vietnam to go backpacking. That's pretty interesting. But now everyone just tuning in, we're talking to Mike Scotti from the film Severe Clear. For anyone just tuned into us, now let me ask you, what was your degree in? Did you journalism, filmmaking, anything related to this at all, or no?
Not at all. I was my undergrad degree was in finance from University of Miami, and then I actually went to graduate school after I got out of the Marine Corps at NYU Stern, which is a big finance school, and I was a full-time MBA there. While I was there, I actually founded the NYU Stern Military Veterans Club because they didn't have one. That, believe it or not, was a huge catalyst into helping this charity raise a lot of money because I know that the investment banks, you know, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and you know, all those banks love to hire MBAs from top schools that had served in the military. So what I did, I basically formed the Military Veterans Club, you know, linked into Reserve Aid, which was the charity, you know, just right after it had been formed, before they had any money or anything. They didn't have a board of directors. And I used my position as the quote-unquote objective student to go to each one of the banks and say, you know, I need $20,000, I need $50,000, I need $10,000. And if you give me this money, we will have a huge gala, you know, event, a ball, basically, in the fall, and I will invite seven people from Wharton, seven people from Columbia, seven people from MIT, from University of Chicago, and all these, like, hardcore finance schools. And I basically leveraged the fact that the banks wanted access to this talent.
And so it was really a triple win because we're raising money for the troops and their families. We're helping first-year MBA veterans get jobs. And we're helping the banks have access to the talent that they want. And that's what I've just done every time, and I'm continuing to do so now kind of with the next idea, which is a TV show. It's going to be, you know, raising the public's awareness of what's going on. It's going to be helping rebuild individual lives, and it's going to be, raising money for military charities. So it's just the same pattern. It's just applied to a different area. So instead of trying to make money, I'm going to try and, change the world for the better. So, I'm a business guy.
It's awesome. I'm just astounded because most people would say, I made this movie. That's my big thing. I'm going to ride this and all that kind of stuff. And I'm listening to you thinking, and that's pretty much, we thought we were going to talk about. But I'm sitting there going, you're just use that as a rung in the ladder.
Exactly.
You're taking something that most people consider their ultimate success, and you're just saying, yeah, that's just getting me one step closer to really what you care about. I think that's just phenomenal, man.
Well, I appreciate that, man. And I got to tell you, it was a kind of a life-changing event when I got that CNN piece. And, there are probably 400 comments that are below that piece. And I probably got, well over 100 personal private messages from strangers, to my Facebook account, pouring their hearts out. I mean, I get them all the time. I got one last night that, it blew me away. It was an audience member who had served in Iraq. And he basically said that, thank you for telling the story, especially the one about the little girl. And he told me his personal story about how there was Iraqis who were using a bus, basically as an assault vehicle, but there were families on the bus. And this young Marine had to light up the bus and, obviously did a lot of damage, and has been living with this for 7 years. And he had said that he specifically hoped and wished that he had a machine that could hook up to his brain to show his family and his friends what had happened to him while he was over there and all the conflicting emotions that he has to deal with. And, I get that all the time. I have messages from ex-wives of military members who, were young when they got married, and, the husband comes home and he's a different person, and it rips the marriage apart. And, it's like very personal stuff. And I realized this stuff, when I got all that kind of coming in, hitting me, I said, all right. I said, I have the voice. I have the connections. I have the ability to kind of run a business because I've run businesses before, but this business is going to be different. It's going to be about doing goodwill and not just making money. And so, I'm just going to run with it. I'm just going to run with it. And I've been given a gift, which is the film and kind of the chance meeting of the director and Cirque Productions and their talent, because it's a good film. And like you said, it's just a rung in a ladder. And, I've been working with Reserve Aid for 5 years, man, and nothing's changed. We've raised, like I said, $3 million. We've helped, I think, 1,800 plus different families. And we're attacking the symptoms of the problem. And the VA is still underfunded, and, there's still a stigma about talking about PTSD. And I really want to try and break that stigma. So.
Hey, Mike, CJ here. I wanted to make a couple comments on what you just said because, the story you just talked about the soldier lighting up the bus is a similar story that, continues to haunt me to this day. And I don't think I've talked about this on the show. I'm not even sure if I blogged about it because it's something that it wakes me up every night because I have kids. I have a son that's the same age as this boy. And, we were in Fallujah and there was a bus, one of the bigger buses, like a commercial bus, but smaller than like a school bus type thing. It almost looked like just a long van. And, these guys decided they were going to do a drive-by shooting on our patrol. And, we lit with everything we had, killed everyone in the truck. It veered off and crashed into a wall. And when we felt safe enough to approach it, we went in there and, inside this bus was this little kid, like 6 years old. And the, I don't know if these guys were, there was about five or six guys and every single one of them were hit. I mean, the thing looked like Swiss cheese. And there's this little six-year-old boy who somehow miraculously wasn't hit by a single bullet on the floor. And, people don't understand when we're out there, uh, you know, when we're out there doing these things, you know, and you come back and you hear about baby killers and you hear about all these civilians that were killing and things, you know, they don't, it's like that guy said, you know, and I feel the same way. I wish sometimes I could just plug my brain into a projector and show them what it is our soldiers are dealing with. And then to come back and not really have anybody to talk to. You talked about the PTSD stigma. I think the military is addressing that very well. The problem is I don't think society knows how to address it. And, you know, Troy actually told me before I came out on my blog and started talking about PTSD that I was making a mistake. And I'm like, you know, whatever. And I don't think I made a mistake within military channels. It's still kind of debatable, but you know, the fact of the matter is my PTSD has been used against me because, you know, the minute you just get upset at something, you're not upset at, you know, something that deserves to be upset about. You're upset because you're an angry combat vet. And you're right. That's something that we need to change.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. I use my Facebook almost as like a temperature checker. And, you know, I post on a lot of stuff, you know, and the vast majority of people there are my friends, and there's probably 10% of people who I don't really know, friend of me because of whatever exposure the film has gotten. But if I post an interview on a well-known TV show or, you know, radio or whatever, you know, people will comment about it, and there'll be all kinds of people liking it. And the other day I posted something that was one of the best articles I've ever read about the war. And it was from, I don't even remember where it was from. But it was an article about a gunnery sergeant who had done 5 tours in Iraq. I think it might have been Cincinnati. But the gunnery sergeant did 5 tours in Iraq, and he had a letter that he had given his father. And he said, only open this if I'm incapacitated, you know, and I can't really think for myself or whatever. And in the letter, he basically says, you know, I love you, Dad. And if I can't ride Harleys and you know, drink whiskey and smoke cigars, let me go. And sure enough, the father on the 5th tour, you know, the son, 27-year-old Gunny, which is phenomenal. I mean, he flew through the ranks, you know, was hit in the head and was, you know, still alive, but, you know, obviously not in good shape. He was pretty much incapacitated. And the way it was written, I mean, I had tears in my eyes when I was reading it, and I linked to it. And I found that from another Marine. And the other Marine's comment, which I copied and cut and pasted, was basically, you know, a sense of perspective. Not always wanted, but always needed, Semper Fi. And, you know, I got 2 comments on that, when I usually get 20. And whatever it is I post, I can post, I'm in Central Park and the sun is shining, and 20 people will like it and comment on it. And here is arguably the most important thing that I've posted ever on Facebook, just because it was such a hard-hitting thing, and 2 people. And I don't know how many people read it. I don't know. You can't really check that. But to me, that's a temperature checker, and that's just the way it is. It's just the way our society is, and that there is that wall, that barrier between the people who have served in combat and people who have not. And one of the things I talked about in the CNN piece was that ad that came out from the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. You know, and how good it was. I don't know, the one where the soldier gets off the aircraft in the airport and the whole thing is empty. I don't know if you guys saw it, but
And then the Marine meets him on the street.
Yeah, I mean that. I saw that, dude. I almost lost my mind. I was like, that's the greatest thing ever. I mean, they did such a good job on it because I was like, they nailed it. And you know, that's when I realized that. You know, when you're like, if you're training and your toes are cold, if your toes are cold, everybody else's toes are cold. If you're hungry, everybody else in the unit's hungry too. We're all the same. And you know, if I felt a sense of isolation and anger and resentment and, you know, just, you know, like, not part of everybody else's kind of world for, you know, 6, 8, 10 months after I got back, I forgot the lessons that I learned. So does everybody else, or not everybody, but there's a good number of people that will feel the same way that are combat veterans. And just the more and more I kind of get the word out there, the more it echoes back to me that it's the truth. And, you know, I think the society, America is an awesome country, and our civilian population are an awesome civilian population. They just have to be presented things in the right way.
and that's kind of the phase where I'm at now. And this film, you know, this film would never get released, you know, a huge, you know, nationwide release. It would, you know, it just not that type of film. But people that get to go see it, that either know me personally or they get dragged there kicking and screaming, and I see them every day. They love the film because it's a good film, and it portrays something that normally would be foreign to them in a way that they can absorb it. And it's not an easy film to watch, as you guys know. But, like, I'm talking like soccer moms. You know, soccer moms get it. They get it. So that's the next project. So
let's talk about that. Now, this has been in several cities, New York City, like Houston, I think, L.A. What has been some of the feedback that you've gotten on the film from military or complete civilians, I guess? Any feedback or things that stick out in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, and you can definitely feel the different energies from the kind of different crowds in different parts of the country. I mean, Texas loves it. You know, I'm in Houston now. It's actually screening. The show starts in 20 minutes, and I'll be doing the Q&A, you know, after it's over or whatever. And, you know, it's the crowd gets the jokes. They laugh. They love it. There's a joke about, you know, Texas A&M flag and emergency toilet paper and all this. I mean, they love it. Texas is a great state, military friendly, and you know, you can feel the energy in the crowd. Other parts of the country, you know, a little bit different. New York obviously being one of them. It's just a different kind of vibe. It's a different population. It's almost like a different culture or different subculture there. What's interesting is that I've seen people that are like clearly like left-wing, ultra-liberal people that actually enjoyed the film. Because the film, and I get this from conversations, but I also get it from the Q&As. And I've done probably 40 Q&As. And, you know, even people that are clearly left-wing, clearly against the war, they have a respect because the film is not political, and it doesn't make a statement, you know, politically left-wing or right-wing or whatever. It just shows war for what it is. And it's not anti-war, and it's not pro-war, but as my good friend Anton Sattler, who's a Marine, says, you know, any good war film ends up inherently being anti-war. And it is what it is. And it's just, you know, if it shows the realities of war, I mean, anybody in their right mind would obviously not, doesn't want a war to happen, you know, and they want to exhaust every single avenue and make sure it's absolutely necessary. So, but, you know, and without ruining the ending for people who haven't seen it, but it was really my one allegiance throughout the whole film is to the Marine Corps and
right.
Nothing else. It's to the Marine Corps, and not just the Corps as some, like, blinding thing, but it's really the Marines, you know, and you know, you guys are the same way with the soldier. I mean, it's just, you guys get it. So, you know, we did have one interesting incident in New York City. We had war protesters at one of the Q&As. And
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, it was, unfortunately, we didn't have cameras inside the theater. They wouldn't let us for insurance reasons, but it would have been great to capture it on film. And it was a Q&A, and usually me and the director will be up front, and we'll have one set of mics, and the crowd will have another microphone. And the lady was very angry, and she was like, I was waiting for her to ask her question, and she's just kind of, you know, ripping me a new one. And I'm like, you know, okay. And I basically cut her off. I said, ma'am, do you have a question? And as soon as I said that, she said no, and her whole row stood up, and they started yelling, and, you know, the chaperones or whatever, the ticket takers were, like, trying to get the microphone from her. And I basically, you know, I wanted to break the tension because people were starting to get a little uneasy. And I said, you know, are you Kanye West? You know, because she's not giving the microphone back, whatever. And you know, the crowd sort of laughed. But then the crowd kind of turned on her, and you know, because they tried to leave, and they said, you know, you said your piece, let him respond. And my response was from General Mattis, who, you know, I think is one of the greatest leaders of all time. He was the first Marine Division General when I was in Iraq, and he was actually the Task Force 58 commander when I was in Afghanistan. And I mean, this guy just comes walking up. I'm in a machine gun hole. And he comes walking up to the lines by him, you know, just him. Hey, I'm General Mattis. And we're like, oh my God. So basically he said, you know, if you see war protesters when you get back home, you thank them. And, you know, you basically remind them that, you know, it's the boys that are overseas fighting or men and women overseas fighting that allows them to say what they want to say without getting arrested. And, you know, that's my line. And, you know, it's a glorified version of the truth, but in the end, it really is the truth. So, but, you know, then there were some jarheads in the audience, who had clearly been in combat, who started to get a little bit more rough and words were spoken. It was awesome. It was great. I mean, at least people were talking about it, you know. So
hey, Mike, I don't know if you've heard, but I've heard rumors that the term jarhead can't be used anymore because you can actually fill a jar.
I like it. I like it. Well, it's good because I'm a dumbass, so that definitely applies to me.
just my Marine Corps
jab. You had to get your one punch in there, didn't you, CJ?
Yeah, that's what he did. Hey, Mike, let me ask a couple more questions here. How many you talked about sitting you down in the room with, and dumping everything out, just talking. How many hours of footage do you think you shot that ended up, you know, going to film? What was the total amount of raw footage you shot for this?
Well, I shot probably between 20 and 22 hours total. And then we got, there's three other Marines two other Marines were with us, and then one other Marine was back with the guns. And it's basically a compilation. So all together was 60 hours. 20 of it, probably a third of it was mine. What appears in the movie, you know, a vast majority of it is mine. And then they use, like, a lot of the stuff that's back with the artillery is one of my buddies, Joe Haleko. And then when you see some of the stuff is clearly, you know, been sourced. I mean, some of the stuff is our British soldiers, like some of the quick shots when the BBC's talking. I mean, some of it we clearly source from outside, which is all listed in the credits or whatever. We're not hiding anything. But, it's basically my story told through my footage using other guys who were with us on the battlefield to fill in the holes and then using some of the I think at the end when Rumsfeld's talking, there's, you know, a couple of shots that we source from the outside. But it's just amazing that I was able to get the – no one ever – I always get the question is, you know, did the military let you do this? I mean, nobody ever said put the camera down, you know, and I never let it obviously get in the way of doing my job. But because my job was forward observer, you know, artillery forward observer / artillery liaison officer attached to an infantry battalion – you know, if I didn't have a video camera in my hand, I would have had a set of binoculars. So I just basically swapped the video camera for the binos, and I just did my job. It's really like a unique kind of moment that I had the job that I was, you know, that I was able to do that. If I was an infantry platoon commander, there's no way I would have been able to shoot all this footage.
Yeah, as a forward observer, you kind of were around the radios and making the call for fires and all that stuff. But, yeah, you were not actually, you know, bounding your squads around, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and if I had been, I wouldn't have been obviously filming. It's just one.
Now, you still there?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I got another.
Okay.
Actually, my buddy Jim Beal, who's a major in the United States Marine Corps, is calling me that. He's listening.
Well, I know we kept you a little bit longer. We meant to just want to wrap up. So you talk about the film. You've got the website up. Is it severeclear.com? Is that right or no?
It's
kind of thing.
TheBeerClipTheMovie.com.
That's it, the movie, yeah. And you guys are on, it's got a Facebook fan page, right? And you're on Twitter?
Yep, it's got a Facebook page. They're on Twitter. I don't, the Twitter hasn't been getting used as much as it should. You know how these things are with social networking. If you don't really push it and it doesn't kind of catch that point of leverage or that tipping point or whatever, it kind of just recedes, it falls back in on itself. And, you know, the Twitter... When we get if the TV show that I'm kind of planning on, we're going to film the pilot, if that gets picked up in a series, I will be, you know, pushing out tons of Twitter, and there'll be people kind of working, the systems working with us, because it is pretty time-consuming.
Well, you have 928 followers right now on Twitter, so that's not too bad. So I guess what's the plan now for the movie? I know you guys have done some limited kind of screenings. Are you still working to try to get it theaters nationwide, or I guess what's the run plan for that?
Well, I think we're kind of in the final third of the theatrical. We opened big in New York and San Diego. We got extended both New York and San Diego, and New York was a theater called the Angelica, which is a very prestigious theater in New York, which was an honor to be able to show there. Then we added L.A. Those are about to, I think, Thursday? Yeah, today's Thursday. I think tonight's actually the last night in New York, San Diego, and L.A. Dallas was a one-night-only last night. Houston is tonight, one-night-only. Then we're heading to up in the Northeast. We got a week in Salem, Massachusetts, because we actually won the Salem Film Festival a couple weeks ago. And then we're going to be screening up in Maine, in Saco, Maine. And we may add some other cities kind of in the Southeast you know, it's kind of yet to be determined. Then we are, the DVD comes out April 12th. And
okay, good. That was my next question, is when that was going to be out.
Yeah, the DVD will be out April 12th. You can get it off the website, you know, and then a couple months later you'll be able to get it in stores. But if you want to watch it, you know, sooner rather than later, definitely just get it off the website. And then actually in Cannes, France, in May, to sell the international rights, we're actually throwing a huge party on a yacht. So if any of the listeners happen to be in Cannes, France on May 16th, please come party at our yacht. I'm probably going to die that night, too. So either that or I'm just going to fall over the side of the boat.
Are you going to try to drink yourself to death?
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Okay.
So.
Well, we'll have to see if maybe VAMC will send Marcus over there. Maybe, you know, since he's our resident Marine, maybe he can go over and hang with you. But, but and you know, CJ doesn't drink, and so we'll have to send Marcus. But, hey, so Severe Clear, the movie. Yeah, there you go. SevereClearTheMovie.com, that's where people can, our listeners can follow along, see where the premieres are showing up, kind of keep the details on how the movie's going along. Is that right? Everything will be right there?
That is correct.
All right. Okay. Hey, you know, I know we kept you on a long time, Mike. Is there anything that you would like to let our listeners know that we didn't talk about?
No, I just want to thank everybody who's, you know, who served, you know, past, present, and to the younger generations who are going to be, you know, the younger people out there who are thinking about, because they pop up at a lot of the screenings too, and you know, just thank you, you know, from a crusty Marine to everybody out there, just, you know, thank you, and you know, I love this damn country. That's really it.
Awesome, awesome. Well, hey, I want to thank you on behalf of all of us, and I'm sure CJ and Marcus will say it too. Coming on, you not only you did great stuff with this film to show people a glimpse of what it was really like, and it's still like really for combat in general, but what you're doing with your organization and everything else, again, honored and flattered to be talking to you and to know somebody sort of that's doing this kind of stuff.
I appreciate that very much, and I appreciate the chance to be on your show, man. It was awesome.
All right, awesome.
Thanks,
hey,
Mike.
Hang on the line. Yeah, hang on the line, and Marcus is going to talk to you in the green room, and I'm going to jump in here real quick to talk with you real quick, too.
Awesome. Will do.
All right.
All right.
Great, Mike Scotty. Don't forget to check that out. It was a great movie. You can also go to A Soldier's Perspective and find my review of the movie, Severe Clear. I thought it was a great movie. It was raw. It was interface. And you get to really see kind of how, you know, a soldier or Marine goes from, you know, being all giddy and excited about combat to, you know, the change of emotions that combat brings to you, just based off of what, you know, experiences they have and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, I'm going to put the review there in the chat room, but you can also just go to Google, type in, February 12th, 2010 is when I wrote the review of Severe Clear. So glad it's coming out for more people to be able to see, because it is great. But there's also in that review is there are a couple photos as well as a few short clips, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, check that out. I've also just published while we were doing this interview as well a link that we just put up on A Soldier's Perspective as well about a high school in Virginia. And what I need is your help contacting this high school, because they're insinuating through their quote-unquote history classes that soldiers are in Iraq basically to open up the markets to places like McDonald's. So, you know, it's that capitalist imperialism that is being taught in our school systems, at least there in Virginia. So I've got the information up there on A Soldier's Perspective. I sent the link in the chat room, but it's the latest link right now. Yeah, a little frustrating, but you remember how that one high school, you know, anytime I hear that our guys or kids are being brainwashed, by all means, you know, I want to do something about it. I think our education system is out of control, and, you know, just teach history. You know, teach about Iwo Jima, that's fine. You can teach about Iwo Jima all you want, but, you know, let's keep the politics out of it. Let's keep the partisan crap out of it, and just train our kids, you know. Let the parents be the brainwashers. Let me brainwash my kids into thinking that, you know, we have a constitution that means something in this country,
and, you know, let the liberals brainwash their kids into thinking that the liberals are, you know, that the Constitution means nothing except for Bob. He's a good liberal. I'd pet him if I was there. I'd pat his head and thank him. But, you know, the extreme left, I guess I should say, because we have extreme people on the right as well that are just as psycho. Anyway, yeah, so check that out. As a soldier, it pisses me off. I can't tell you how many times I've come home or talked to people on the street that are, you know, opposed to war in general. What do you mean we don't have time?
We have 5 minutes left. That means we need to talk about next week's show. We need to wrap up this week's show. We need to talk about next week's show. And then we need to say goodnight, because that'll take about 5 minutes.
But I can rant for 5 minutes.
No, we need to close this week's show. We need to tell them about next week's show. And then we need to say goodnight.
Good guy. You know, what? Producers.
That's
how you are. Right.
Yes. The producer needs to slap the host around and remind him that. Host, you need to say next week we're going to have Matt Gallagher from the Millwall Baboon to talk about his new book and his experiences from Iraq.
Thank you, production guy. All right. Yes, next week we're going to have Matt Gallagher. Matt Gallagher is going to be on the show. He used to have the Millblog Kaboom, and he's now got a new book out called Kaboom, which I am holding in my never formerly nicotine-stained fingers. And I haven't read it yet, but I plan on reading it over the weekend. But it's called Kaboom, Embracing the Suck in a Savage Little War. It's got to be great. If you ever followed the Kaboom blog, and if the book is anything like that, you're going to be enthralled. So we're going to talk to him first next
CJ,
week.
CJ, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, sorry, man. The freaking switchboard screwing up. Hey, you need to start reading that book now, dude. It's a long book to read, but you ain't going to be able to put it down. It is everything his blog was, and then some.
All right. Well, yeah, I'm going to read it this weekend. We've also got Matt Goss on. We got a couple of Matts next week. We got Matt Goss.
Yeah.
He is a Vegas headliner and entertainer. He performs around the world, from Tokyo to Sydney to the Wembley Stadium. He's a best-selling author. He's a recording artist. He sold more than 17 million albums worldwide. Under Matt Goss? Or did he sell albums as a member of a band?
He's a member of a band in Great Britain. You know, we've tried to have Matt on a couple times before, and there's been some family issues and scheduling issues, and weren't able to do it. He just opened up now in Caesar's Palace. He just opened up 2 weeks ago, and we're going to be done to talk about what he has done, and he's working with Soldiers Angels some, and as a British citizen, his family heritage in the British military, but also what he's trying to do in helping out the U.S. military.
That's right. Yeah, because he's got that song, I Am an American, with Patti LaBelle, right?
I believe so.
Right. Because I remember
he's
him
teamed
now.
Up. He does a lot of stuff.
About a month or two ago.
Yeah, a couple months ago, and we had a couple times we had to scratch and stuff. But yeah, he teamed up with the Pussycat Dolls. He does a lot of stuff with them and stuff like that. So yeah, he'll be on next week. Is the Matt show? Maybe we even get Matty B back on, who didn't make it tonight. Three Matts.
Yeah, well, we understand. It's because I called him a loser, and he's probably crying right now. And
I'll change my name to Matt for a week.
Okay. There you go.
All right. But we'd like to thank our guests for tonight. We'd like to thank them all. They, you know, except for the one who didn't show up. By golly. But
we'll have him on April 8th. So we'll be able to catch him.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. So anyway, we do want to thank Sam Fiddler for coming on. Don't forget, check votefiddler.org or votefiddler.com. We'd like to thank him. I'd like to thank Mike Scotty from the movie Severe Clear, severeclear.com. And you can also, we'd also like to thank Matt Bernard for coming on at the last minute and accepting our last minute invitation. So thanks to him. And check him out on, Matt's going to kill me.
Brian Stone.
I don't have,
I think it's,
what's that?
I think it's Brian, brianstone.com. I'm pretty sure.
There you go. Yep.
Yeah.
So, thanks for all of our guests. We will see you all again next week. It's been nice talking to you, Matt. Troy, Marcus, have a great week and good evening and a great weekend,
all right,
too.
All right, you guys, too. We'll talk to you next week.
Semper Fi.
From CJ and the gang at USERVED, thank you for joining us for another edition of our military podcast. We'll see you next week.